in Seattle,
Seattle.
And you need to buy yourself a home. We'll be right there for you,
because
we're the realtors
that you can trust.
So go to RodandConcertDown.com.
Don't go anywhere unless you want to. It's the Ron and Don Show, starring Ron and Don, and sometimes me, at ronanddon.com.
Hey, you guys, what's going on? Welcome to episode 701. Can you believe that? 700 episodes now of the Ron and Don Show, and we are back live in the Les Schwab Studios.
What is up, Ron and Don Nation?
Hey, happy Friday to everyone. As you know, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, we do a show that's typical of what we did on Kyle Radio, where we just talk about stuff that's happening around Seattle and the great specific Northwest, is what my son likes to say. Today, though, every Friday, we focus on real estate. Today, we're going to focus on something that we face a lot. In fact, when you think about our audience, right, 70% of our audience that listens to this podcast are women, right? A lot of these women are boomers, and a lot of them are older boomers. A lot of the women that hire us to be their real estate agents and brokers, a lot of times their partner has passed on and they have been left behind. I think about Mary, that's not her real name, but she was, in fact, she contacted us 2 years ago and she was in Green Lake and she had a home that she owned with Tom and they owned it outright. And Tom had a lot of cool stuff because he was really into cars. So there were car and car parts everywhere when I went there. And also one of Tom's grandkids lived in the house and that particular grandchild was not related to Mary. So when we looked at Tom's will, oh, hang on, didn't have a will, right? And so here she is, and she has his house and all his stuff and her house too, because they got married later on. And now we had to unravel all this and try to figure out what was the grandson's upstairs, what belonged to Mary, what belonged to Tom, what belonged to his estate, what was going to go to probate, and what was going to go away in an estate sale. It got very confusing and complex. Fast forward, I can tell you this today. After going through all this stuff and all of Tom's stuff, and initially, Ron, you remembered, she felt very guilty about getting rid of his stuff because she felt like she had to honor it. So here she was, stuck with all of Tom's stuff. And at the same time, she wanted to get unstuck. And she wanted to move down to Palm Springs because that's where all her friends live. There was no way she could move to Palm Springs because all her money was locked inside this house. So what do you do about the grandchild? It's not her grandchild, but he doesn't want to leave. What do you do about this house that is bought and paid for? And how do you unlock all that? And how do you deal with all these things, and how do you honor Tom at the same time? And that set us down the road as young real estate agents of asking lots of questions about things like probate. Over the years, we're learning things about reverse mortgages. We're learning about different types of wills. We are also learning that a lot of boomer have parents that are dealing with dementia, right? They're dealing with Parkinson's. Many of them are sick. Many of them have not downsized. In fact, they've stayed in their homes. I could tell you a story about a young lady over in Bellevue, and her dad collapsed inside the house. The Bellevue Fire Department found him 3 days later. And the good thing is he did have a will, even though he was struggling mentally. It helped the daughters that were kind of left behind to put together a plan to figure it out, because he was this great Boeing engineer, but he was also very curious and he had trains everywhere. So we have dealt with this quite a bit with our listeners. And Ron, it can be a very sad state of affairs when people don't get their state affairs and they don't put those things together. So that's what we want to talk about today.
Yeah, I think this might be one of the most important episodes we've ever done on our real estate journey, and it's going to help a lot of people. And so I went and met with an attorney named Mackenzie, and she joins us today. Hi, Mackenzie.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And so you work at a View Ridge Law Firm. And what I want to do is start out really broad on describing some of these structures. Like Don brought up mm-hmm. that story. I had a family this week reach out to me. It's like, hey, mom's 91. She doesn't want to leave the house. One sister wants to make a money grab. Me and my brother are estranged from her. What do we do? And I'm like, well, what is the structure of the house? And he's like, what are you talking about? So let's start out really broad. Mm-hmm. When people have a home and either both parents are alive, one parent's alive, how do we think about above and beyond a will that we should structure things and maybe just give us some vocabulary to work with?
Sure. So a will is not enough. Let's start there. Wills don't take effect until after someone has died. There are a couple of different ways that you can own your property. You can own it outright in your own name with your spouse, or sometimes in a second marriage situation, just one spouse's name is on the title. We can talk some more about that. There's also a thing called a living trust, and it's a revocable living trust that allows people to put their home, usually their biggest asset, into this legal entity mm-hmm. that will pass on for the next generation, and it becomes effective either upon their disability or upon their death. So it's very versatile, it can be very flexible, and it can be written exactly the way you want it so that your family receives that big asset in a way that makes sense, either to rent it out or sell it or whatever.
Do most families think that I have a will or I just don't want to deal with this and I'm okay?
Most families just really don't want to deal with it. It's not a fun chore. I totally get that. I mean, who wants to talk about death and dying and mm-hmm. disability? And many people just don't get around to it. Often, they see someone else in their life who's going through grieving or a loss of a loved one, and that prompts them to finally go get this chore off the to-do list.
Yeah. We had a house in Bothell. Granddaughter left behind. Two granddaughters left behind. Mm. One of the granddaughters struggling mentally, the other granddaughter good to go. Grandma lived in this house. She lived well into her 90s. House gets stuck in probate. By the time I get to the house a year later, the rats have overtaken the house. It's a $1 million plus property, but the rats have literally overtaken this house. They were everywhere. And every time I would talk to her, she would say, it's stuck in probate. Mm-hmm. It's stuck in probate. I'm amazed that people don't know what probate is. And so when I would share with people just in my own life, hey, we have this house in Bothell, it's stuck in probate. Mm-hmm. What is probate? And what are people saying, Mackenzie, when they say something is stuck in probate? What does that mean?
So probate is the court process in which all your stuff and your wishes get carried out after you die. And someone from your family or your life, or even sometimes a creditor, has to come forward and file this lawsuit, civil lawsuit in court, in order to move your stuff onto the next person that it's intended for. And it's a public court process. It takes some time, a minimum of 4 months. And when the court process is happening, you got to go ask a judge in order to get things unstuck from probate. So if you are a surviving spouse and your spouse has died and there's some separate property that's stuck in probate because there was a will and now you have to go to probate court with any will, you got to go ask a judge for permission basically to get your own money. And creditors get first dibs and the tax man gets first dibs on that money before you get to live off of it. So wills require being probated, particularly if there is real estate involved. You can't get the deceased person's name off the title of a will, or excuse me, title of real estate if there's a will, unless you go to probate. One of the alternatives is to get a living trust.
Yeah. And so how do you avoid probate? How does a family avoid probate?
Yeah, so a living revocable trust is a really good way to avoid probate, because if you maintain that trust with just a little bit of homework, you don't have to go to court. So then your will doesn't become a public document for all the world to read and find out what you're passing on. It's less likely to invite litigation because, again, it's not a public document. And it's a vehicle to protect your loved ones from that litigation, from fighting. They can access the funds immediately upon the loved one's death. And it can also be activated during a disability period too, so you don't have to go to court to get a guardianship or conservatorship.
Yeah. Well, so my 13-year-old son and I live here. I'm 56, going to be 57. If I were to take this home, and there's also a home in the backyard, if I were to take this property and I were to put this in a living trust, and then I woke up one day and went, I just went to Maui. I love Maui. I want to sell that house and I want to take the proceeds and I want to move to Maui. What happens if you already have the house in a living trust? Are you stuck with that house?
No. So that's the great thing about a living trust. It's super flexible. While you're alive, you're your own trustee, meaning you're in control of your property and the money that you put in the trust, and you can take it out and put it in as many times as you want. You can sell this house, go buy another house, and put it in the trust. You could own property in more than one state. Both of those properties can be in the trust, and then you avoid probate in two states upon your passing.
Yeah. How expensive is it to put something in a living trust?
It's just a little bit more than doing a will. Basically, all the same steps need to be accomplished when you're doing a trust-based estate plan versus a will, because the attorney needs to ask you all the same questions and need to find out what your wishes are, what the stuff is that's involved, who are the people. It is a little bit bigger stack of paperwork to do, but really not that much more. We're talking maybe $1,000 or extra $2,000 compared to doing a will plan. So on the back end, you can save your family, though, tens of thousands of dollars by doing this work up front.
All right. She's Mackenzie Swart. She owns the View Ridge Family Law and Estate Planning firm. So, Mackenzie, this might be a little bit in the weeds, but I think it applies to a lot of people. We just had a dinner with a client, and we're talking about, they're selling their house. They're going to get the biggest chunk of money they've ever seen in their lives. And then I'm like, make sure you understand what all the taxes are going to be, especially capital gains. And if you had one partner that dies, the other one doesn't die, and there are different exemptions, et cetera. We're not going to go down the road of all the tax code. But is there ways for people to preserve more of their money? Because in this market, you might get $1 million out of a sale, where if I'm in Omaha, I'm covered because I'm only going to make, $300,000, right? So, can you talk to just those concepts a little bit? Because I think people here in the Pacific Northwest, if you just got the blinders on and you haven't thought about this, it could cost you not just hundreds of thousands of dollars, possibly. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So capital gains is certainly a factor here in the Northwest, where we've had huge appreciation on our real property. And there are exemptions, $250,000 right now for a single person, $500,000 for a couple. The other thing you can think about is whether you're going to reinvest in another house, and making sure your timing is right on that, and talking to people like Ron and Don here about when to get into another house to make sure you don't lose the credit on your capital gains. I think another thing to think about in this regard too is when you do the sale, perhaps timing it around a year where you may have less other income so that your capital gains rate is lower than what it could be. And also putting it in perspective as well, too. Capital gains rate is typically lower than the income tax rate for most people. So there's that factor to consider.
So if you have a family with just one house, mm-hmm. and they're late to the game on this, do you still recommend putting it in a trust? I talked to a good friend of mine this week, I referenced, mom's in her 90s. There's some squabbling between the siblings. They don't have a trust. And so it's getting really messy. And he's like, what do I do? And I said, talk to a lawyer, because at least you're going to write it all down. I don't know if that was good advice. I thought it was good advice. But is it ever too late in the game to try to get this stuff put together?
Never too late. If a parent in that situation is facing dementia or Alzheimer's and memory loss, if they've lost capacity, then there may not be the possibility of doing a trust anymore without some court intervention. But there is still a lot of things that can be done in order to minimize the fighting and the litigation, like going to court to get a conservatorship in order for one of those siblings to be in charge to make sure that there's not waste on the property, that it doesn't get abandoned, and to make sure that it is preserved for the future. The other thing that we can be talking about, too, is doing a trust. If one person does get appointed as a conservator, the court can grant the authority to an adult child to set up that trust and protect it, so then there's at least less court intervention that needs to be done in the future.
Yeah. What are other things that you can put in a living trust? If I have an investment property, mm-hmm. can I put in a living trust? I don't think you can put a car, or if you have a work vehicle, you can't put that in a living trust, right?
So you can put cars in a living trust. It's often not advisable, though, because cars invite liability and litigation. And so usually most attorneys who do this will advise not to put a car in a trust. There might be certain exceptions, so this is a good thing to talk to an attorney about your particular
If you had a car thing. Collection, let's say, right. of like vintage Porsches.
Exactly. if they're not out and about driving around and you're just collecting, that's a good thing to put into a trust.
Yeah. 1031 exchange. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get confused about that and they don't understand when they can use a 1031 exchange. Mm-hmm. You were just talking about personal property, buying a house and getting your capital gains credit. Can you explain the difference between that and a 1031 exchange? Because I think all of us are very confused about it.
Yes. So when you are selling a residence that's been your primary residence, you need to have lived in it a lot. 2 of 5 years, that's a personal property, and there's certain credits and things for that on the tax regard and when we're talking about capital gains. If you have an investment property or rental property and you want to sell that, there's this vehicle called the 1031 where you can just keep pushing the capital gains can down the road, mm-hmm. and you can reinvest the money into another investment. Doesn't necessarily need to be another rental, but you have to make sure that the money never hits your own accounts. You need to use a broker, a trustee, someone who in particular is licensed to do this type of work to make sure that the money stays essentially in escrow. And there is a limited period of time in which you need to reinvest too. So you want to be sure to be talking to knowledgeable people and getting advice from professionals when you're doing that.
So let's say on the personal side, because most people listening own a property that's mm-hmm. gone up a lot in value. Mm-hmm. So let's say that you bought a house 10 years ago and you've lived in it, it's your primary, and you bought it for $500,000. Mm-hmm. Let's say since that time, you've done some upgrades to the house, right? And you have done upgrades and a remodel and you put another $500,000 into it. And you're a married couple. You've decided now that you want to move to Maui and you go to sell the house and you're going to sell it for $1.6 million. How do capital gains work in that? And do I get any credit for the work and the money that I've spent on the house?
Good point. So any money that you've put into the house to improve it, you can get a credit essentially for those funds that you've used to make capital improvements to the property. Now, we're not talking about ordinary maintenance, like having the lawn done, but things like putting a roof on the house, an extra room, major improvements. You want to keep track of all of those funds so that when you go to your CPA and do your tax return, you can have your records just in case there's ever an audit to demonstrate how much you get credit for on the basis of that property.
So we've talked about couples, we've talked about families. I would like to end my final question for you is going to be selfish for me. Single guy, not married, multiple properties. Do I need to put these in a trust? Like I'm a sole operator here. I kind of have a really janky internet will, but like for someone like me, it's like, I don't want to worry about it. I'm still relatively young. They'll figure it out. But what if people in my instance should do?
I think a trust for a single person is sometimes even more valuable than it is for families because you're probably going to be asking essentially a friend to come forward to spread out the assets upon your death to your beneficiaries. And the more you have all that property lined up in a single entity, your trust, the easier it's going to be for your trustee to spread it out, the less work and therefore less cost it's going to be. And as well, it's also an opportunity to think about who you want to inherit those things and whether or not you can also include maybe charitable giving in your plan.
Yeah. Couple more quick questions we run into. We're kind of amazed at all the reverse mortgages that we run into. What is a reverse mortgage? Tom Selleck seems to love them. I know I know as a real estate agent, I don't, because even trying to get the reverse mortgage company to call you back after someone's deceased to get a payoff is next to impossible. What is the reverse mortgage game, and why do people do it? And what should you do if someone's passed on? A lot of times you don't even know they had a reverse mortgage because some people are embarrassed by it and they didn't tell you.
Yeah. So the reverse mortgage is a tool for usually elderly people to get some cash out of the house, out of the equity that they have, especially in Seattle where it's been built up over the years. And a lot of relatives end up being surprised after the loved one has died that there's no equity left in this place. And now we have, you know, just another company we got to track down and give notice to in the probate in order to sell off mom's house. And it usually leaves the relatives with more work if the relative hasn't been open about what they're doing. I think it's an opportunity for families to have conversations, ask your older relatives as politely and gently as you can. What's the plan? How are you living? Where's your stream of income right now, so that we can make sure you're taken care of?
Yeah. A couple other things we see. I know a family, dad had 26 homes on this hill. Mom got left with those, and then she passed. So it's four kids. One of them has the POA and the other three
power of attorney.
Yeah. And they are, how would you coach people up when it comes to power of attorney? Because you can have more than one power of attorney, right? So how would you coach them up if there's three or four kids, and you are putting your will together and you don't want everyone to fight over your assets that you may or may not have, especially if you put a reverse mortgage on your property and tell anyone. And then they're like, we're rich. And it's like, you're not.
Right. You just have work to do. Right.
Yeah. How do you coach people up on the POA? So after mom or dad or both are gone, that it doesn't cause such strife in families, because we see that as well. It's heartbreaking, right?
Yeah. So the power of attorney is the legal tool that people can use while they're alive and well to designate someone else to be in charge of the money, to be the project manager, basically, for their money when they start to lose capacity or lose memory. And the power of attorney, it's a job. So you want to pick out someone, of course, that you trust, but also has the time to do that work, and someone who can manage all those family relationships too. So I often recommend that we just pick one person, because if you have more than one power of attorney, some banks won't even talk to them unless both people are there in person, which can make it even more difficult to do the job.
Yeah. And then you can pick someone in your family that's not a family member to be the power of attorney. And sometimes if you think there's going to be some strife, that that may be the way to go, to hire a professional, right?
Yes, definitely. So there are a number of fiduciary companies in the area that do this work for a living. And it's a way to have a neutral person if you're worried about your family members having strife over how to manage the property. And when you have a big portfolio of rentals, like that example you were providing, it might be the best case scenario, just have someone who knows how to manage property serve in that role.
I mean, my thing and my takeaway here, and then we're going to wrap it up.
You already did a takeaway.
I know, I'm doing a double
this
takeaway.
This is your second
my
takeaway.
Double takeaway is this is an area I feel like that we are super uncomfortable about as a country. It's very, very important. And we think that we understand it when we really don't. And so, like, this can be the best money spent. Well, I'm going through this with my parents right now. We're going to spend, a sizable amount of money to get it set up. But it's going to save us tens of thousands of dollars down the road. And while my parents are of sound mind, they get to make the choice. They get to tell us what they want to happen. They get to dictate the terms, and it's all clear, and you have a professional doing it, so the emotion is tamped down a little bit between the siblings, because it's like they go to the professional, they get it handled, and now we're all on the same page. So I would just really encourage people, and this is the motivation I had to do this segment today, that it's uncomfortable. I get it. Nobody wants to look in the mirror at their own mortality, but this is one of the greatest gifts you can give your family, is when a loved one passed away, you're mourning, you're sad. You don't want to be going through the technicalities of probate at that time. Like, get it handled, get it done, and then you'll have a rule book and a professional there to help you get this to the finish line.
Yeah, that's really good, Ron. And money is a weird, Ron talks about this a lot. Money is a weird thing. And
Mom told me I got the house on her deathbed.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't care. Like, is it in writing?
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. My grandparents never talked about death, and they never talked about money. Greatest generation, right? Mm-hmm. Bootstraps. Let's go. Mm-hmm. They raised a boomer generation. And I have to say, my parents were the exact same way. For younger parents, what would you say? Because you don't want to be morbid, and at the same time, as your kids are growing up, they should know that you're not always going to be around, and that there is a plan for someday if you're not around and suddenly. So my son's 13, and we check in on each other's mental health every couple weeks, and within that, we have talked about me someday not being around. With everything that you've seen, how would you kind of coach up this generation and Ron touched on it, and talking about death and talking about money, because those are the two things that our parents and our grandparents did not talk about. It was just, you did not talk about that. So.
Right. And money so often is a proxy for love in families. Mm. So I think for the current generation of parents right now, nothing is really taboo anymore, right? We talk about so many other things that the prior generation couldn't, and it's even, you know, discussed in school. So I think this is another area that you can have teaching moments with your children when you're in tax season and getting all that paperwork. Expose them a little bit about those chores of life that have to happen, and also, it's an opportunity to give reassurance too that you got a plan. Just like if you know, there's a backup babysitter in your life, you can explain it as an analogy. I think in that way too, that there's always going to be someone to take care of you if something ever happens. We know that our neighbor Mary is there to take care of you just in case Grandma and Grandpa can't get to you soon enough. I think there's lots of ways that we can introduce this and make it matter of fact. And an ordinary part of being a responsible adult.
Yeah. Mackenzie Sorge has joined us from View Ridge Family Law and Estate Planning. And you can get in touch with them and ask about family will plans, family trust plans, family wealth plans. They can help with all that. Before you go, why do you... I have friends that are attorneys. Some like to be trial attorneys. Some like family law. Focused on helping kids. This is very unique. Why do you do this, and why did you pick this vein of the law?
Yes, so I've been practicing about 18 years. When I was in law school, I had a great opportunity to do clinical practice. So I got to experiment on real people under supervision, and I realized I really liked working closely with people rather than my internships where I was just writing and reviewing contracts. I really like the impact that I can make with people and directly helping them. I spent a lot of my early years doing courtroom work, representing families and folks who are involved in the foster care system. And when I started my own practice, I wanted to do law in a way where we could prevent some of the strife that happens in court as much as possible. And I love planning with people because I can help them avoid all those horrible experiences that I saw people go through during the court process, which really is not geared towards helping families.
Yeah. If you're listening to this right now and your family doesn't know where you want to be buried, or if you want to be buried, or if you want to be turned into plant food, or what's going to happen with your stuff. And in fact, if you're older, the best gift you can give them is to become a minimalist and go through your stuff. So much shit is left behind, and people don't want your shit. They don't. I have six bicycles, and I went through my six bikes the other day, and I asked my son, which one do you want? And the other five are going away this weekend to charity, right? So really take this time of spring cleaning to go through your stuff. And sometimes we're leaving things behind and it's out of our own ego. And you strap people down with those things and they don't know what to do. And they feel like hell when they drop it off at Goodwill or they throw it in the dump. And I can't tell you how many homes that I have gone through where we back up the dump truck and we are taking things off the walls and they are ultimately ending up in the dump somewhere. So go through your stuff now. And just remember, you value that more than a lot of other people do. It's one of the most loving things you can do. And if you don't have a will, or something were to happen to you today, you had a stroke and a heart attack, and no one would know what to do, you are just creating a burden for other people that you love and care about. So don't do that. Reach out, talk to McKinsey, or talk to someone like McKinsey, and start having these conversations today, you guys. It's really, really important. And I can't even tell you the financial implications. If you have some money in the bank or money in a house, and if you leave the courts behind to battle this out, or the state of Washington or King County, that sucks. You don't want to do that. So we've seen that too much in our real estate business. So McKinsey, great today. A lot of times you put people in front of a microphone and they freeze. You were amazing. So thanks for doing that. How can people reach out? How can they get in touch? How can they connect with you?
Thank you. So I can be found at View Ridge Family Law and Estate Planning. We have a website, viewridgelaw.com, and we can be reached by phone as well, 206-336-9195.
Okay. And we'll have all that information in the show notes, and you guys can reach out to Ron and myself, because I think I have at least one person a week reach out and say, hey, my mom and dad, I'm dealing with this. I'm the POA. We're starting down this road. My friend Sandy Wilcutt works at Starbucks. She just reached out last week and started asking those questions. So we are here to help. Hey, you guys, thanks for listening to this episode. I just scared the hell out of McKinsey. You okay?
You have a booming voice.
Yeah.
Charlie just lays there because he's used to it. Hey, you guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ron and Don Show. Don't forget, Les Schwab has a great tire sale going on right now. They also have another spring food drive coming up. Can't wait to tell you about. So stop by LesSchwab.com. Save lots of money on tires. Also, you can take your rig, throw it up in the rack, give it a free pre-trip safety check just to make sure you're ready to hit the road with your family and loved ones this spring and summer. Hey, Ron, if you need a loan, Mitch is waiting, right?
Yeah, Mitch.loans. You can give him a call or an email. He'll get you set up and ready to go because spring has sprung. Buyers are getting back out there. Let's do this thing.
Yeah. Don't forget, if you're investing, if you're buying, selling, we're here to help. We'll meet you wherever you're at on your real estate journey. And because all our listeners are all over the sound, we sell the sound. In fact, we just sold a house in Edmonds. I'm heading down to Federal Way tomorrow here in Seattle over in Magnolia, the east side. We are here for you. All right. Just go to RonandDonSitDown.com. We'll sit down virtually and then we'll come see you. All right. And I'll even bring Charlie the dog. So Ron, for Ron and myself, Paul is overseas. How is Paul doing?
He's doing pretty good.
All right.
He's doing pretty good.
Paul has been
keep your head up.
Yeah, Paul's been facing cancer, and he actually has been producing this show from his hospital bed, right? What else are you going to do from your hospital bed? Why not produce a radio show? So we are very, very grateful to him. Our thanks to Alex as well. And, of course, Charlie the dog. And then here comes my son with his trumpet to take us out. You keep your head up and your shoulders back. We'll see you next time. You've been listening to the Ron and Don Show online on the Ron and Don Radio Network.
Now keep your head up and your shoulders back and keep blowing that trumpet, and we'll see you next time.
Only.
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 Only
on the Ron and Don Radio Network.